This is Jimmy IV, creator and host of the Sexy Cool Lounge podcast. And I want you to continue to shine bright and radiate your vibe because you're now listening to The Road to Rediscovery with Aubrey Johnson.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as a quick reminder, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. Otherwise, we'd love your input and feedback by sending us an email at roadtorediscovery.com, roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. My special guest is a Tennessee Rule 31 listed civil and trained family mediator. Her practice focuses on mediations for family, health and elder care, civil and business, and conflict coaching. She's also a speaker, trainer, and author of How to Live Forever, A Guide to Writing the Final Chapter of Your Life Story. Let's welcome Kimberly Best to the show. Kim, it's so great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. We are grateful to have you on. So, for sure, no doubt. So, Kim, if you don't mind, I'd like for us to first talk about your profession as a mediator and how we can apply conflict resolution to our personal lives and relationships. Then we're going to move over and transition, pivot, if you will, to the difficult task of end-of-life decisions, right, and for loved ones, and just the, you know, the topic of dealing with death here in this life. So if we can first start off by having you give us a clear definition of mediation, and from early on, what sparked your desire to pursue solving problems and resolving conflicts between people?
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, I think mediation is the best kept secret for conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. Because I tell people I am very, very good at working in conflict and helping resolve conflict, unless it's my own life. And that's the beauty of mediation, is a neutral mm-hmm. person mm-hmm. who's not for one or the other. Mm-hmm. I personally say I'm for both sides. Mm-hmm. To help each side be understood, be heard, hear mm-hmm. the other person, mm-hmm. and design a better way forward that handles mm-hmm. their conflict. It's an alternative to the legal route. So there's a lot of lawsuits going on these days, right? You know, from everything from my neighbors bothering me to bigger mm-hmm. things. And it costs a lot. Attorneys are super expensive. There's attorney mm-hmm. mediators too. So, mm-hmm. But it costs a lot, and there's no guarantee that you're going to win or anybody's going to win.
Right.
This way, with mediation, whether it's legal or not, both people can decide what the outcome is and do decide. It's not my job to judge. So right. there's no blame. It's not about fault finding, and it's confidential. What happens in mediation stays in mediation. So gotcha. Even if things can't entirely be resolved, I pretty much guarantee that it's going to be in a better place than where it is now, so long mm-hmm. as people are willing to listen and hear the stories of what's really going on.
Understood. That makes a lot of sense. And that kind of leads into my next question. If you can explain the importance of empathy, right? The role that it plays in mediation.
Yeah, what a beautiful question. I think empathy for the mediator is one of our best tools. So for me, I think it's successful because I work to put myself in both parties' shoes, mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. for both parties. So I understand where you're coming from based on your situation, your story, who you are, and I understand the other party too. Mm-hmm. And part of what the mediator is doing is trying to get you to understand the other person as well, which is empathy building too. Because in conflict, I have folks come in and say, you know, he's a narcissist, she's a narcissist, everybody's a narcissist. But right. The truth is, when we're in pain, we're all narcissistic because then it's all about us.
Yes.
So we open a bigger space where you can see the other person as a human and mm-hmm. from their side and what their experience is, even though it's not your experience. Mm-hmm. Now, Aubrey, mm-hmm. one of my favorite things that I like to share is in conflict, just because I don't agree with you doesn't mean I'm mm-hmm. against you. And
gotcha.
It feels like the person is against us. So we work to see a way to move forward better.
Gotcha. No, that makes a lot of sense. And one thing that I guess I'm receiving as far as a vibe and a theme in which you just explained that, Kim, is as a mediator, it sounds like you really need to have a talent for striking a balance, right, between the emotional end aspect of things and the factual aspect of things, trying to have a cerebral mindset but not be insensitive, and try to have an acknowledgement for the emotional element, at least between the parties, but not not let that direct the conversation. Would that be accurate? Or
you're truly on the right path. The thing is that we know in mediation is mm-hmm. there isn't one truth. You know, you have to hold space for this is your truth and this is their truth. So gotcha. To some degree, it doesn't have to match up at all mm-hmm. if you're willing to understand where the other person is coming from.
Yes.
So the feeling part, when you're heard, when you're acknowledged, when I understand the impact that this had on you, it opens a space where then you can move forward to resolution. But you can't until that happens.
Yes. You know, isn't that ironic? I mean, the major irony that I get from this is, you know, it's so when you fuel the fire. Okay, and there's a disagreement between two people. It is so easy for the two parties to fall into a tailspin where I call it the crazy cycle, where based on one comment, that triggers a response from the other party to retaliate, which then triggers another retaliation from the first party. And then they're in this tailspin, right? And conversely, it can be productive and helpful if one party shows respect, dignity, compassion, and empathy, and that will breed the same from the other party in a lot of cases.
Wow.
We just have to be, you know, who's going to be the hero? Who's going to be the first one to step forward and to demonstrate that compassion, that empathy, and the respect to let them have their talking time and space, right, to express their point, and then we have ours.
Yeah, that's very well said. It's about listening. It's about learning to listen and not to listen for what is wrong, which is what we typically do, what I disagree with. It's to listen for what is right. It is to truly listen to understand.
Yes.
And because we all tell ourselves a story. We all make up a story about someone else's motives. You know, I know why he's doing this, but we don't know that. So understanding that our stories are based in the past.
Yeah.
And the future, the present is not the past. So being willing to hear it from a present and actually be willing to acknowledge that we may not be right in the story that we've made up. And we probably aren't right because there's so many stories it could be. The odds of us getting it right are really very, very slim. So being curious about what really is going on and then valuing the relationship.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's valuing yourself because it may not feel like that relationship is important to you, but the outcome, who you are in that, is going to be important to you. So there's lots of reasons to do it better. And ironically, Aubrey, people learn better conflict skills for going through the process. So
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally believe that. I mean, I am no expert in the field, but in just hearing it, I can feel that that is how they learn, right? You going through the process, having the disagreement, having the conflict, which means feeling some degree of pain too, I would imagine.
Right. So I say it is not easy to go through mediation. It is not easy. There is a degree of pain, but I do know that it's a whole lot easier than not dealing with a conflict, because we have a short-term work and discomfort for longer-term peace and connection versus stuffing it or fighting, causing more harm and building up a pile. I call it a trash pile of hurt. That is really hard to sort out, to just even come back together, because we've made so much distance between us over time.
Yeah, no, I agree. In fact, as you were saying that, I'm a guy of metaphors. I was thinking about this past weekend, my wife and I cleaned out our barn, and moving here to North Texas 8 years ago, you know, over time, that barn collected, you know, and grew as far as stuff being in there, and just spending two grueling days on a weekend clearing it out, right? I mean, just stuffing something and repressing it is not going to make it go away. We had to deal with it, right? And it looks so much better now. It's so much clearer. It's dealt with. And I kind of equate that to, you know, dealing with the conflict. You know, it's important to deal with to continue living a better life.
Yeah. And the first step to that, I think, is to recognize that conflict is normal.
Yes.
Like so many people feel, whether sometimes it's a religion-based feeling, sometimes it's how we're raised, that we're not supposed to be in conflict. But conflict is a sign that something needs to change, or there's an unmet need or an unmet desire, or we've stepped on someone's toes.
Yeah.
And all those things are bridgeable if we talk about them. So conflict is good. It's just that we haven't learned how to do it well, because who's taught us? You know, that you asked me at the beginning why I got into this field. And after a really difficult divorce, my brother pointed me in the direction of something called transformative mediation at Hofstra University. And I started learning about mediation and had this aha moment that we just haven't learned how to do this. I mean, I say to people, what happened to you in your family of origin when you were the source of conflict? Did somebody sit down and say, hey, let's talk about this. Please tell me how you feel. Why did you, you know, go this way? No, we have all kinds of stories of punishment or timeout or being screamed at. And that's what we learned about conflict. So if we learn a better way, we can do it better.
Absolutely, we can, you know, and I think it's that knowledge that you're imparting on the parties that work with you, and hopefully it's anecdotes that they can take with them, you know, beyond the case or the mediation, I would imagine.
Yeah, so it is empowering. When I have a word for mediation, the word I want to use is empowering, because if you do away with the who's right and who's wrong, if you can put blame aside, because blame is a whole nother podcast, and just figure out what you want the future to look like, you have the power to write your future. Now, things are going to happen you don't expect, but nothing's going to happen if you don't at least start trying to write. So you get the say in how you want something to turn out. And, you know, both parties do, or all parties do. It's sometimes a lot more than two people.
Oh, understood. Understood. So this next question I have for you, I'm going to apologize in advance, because it's going to imply an absolute. Okay. And I'm not sure in this profession if there are absolutes or not, but there's a term in your profession. I'm sure you've heard this term. I'm going to bring it up. It's agree to disagree. Okay. So the question I have for you, Kim, is, do you believe all conflicts can be resolved or compromised between parties?
Well, the first part of your question about the absolutes, a mediator's favorite words are, it depends. So, can all conflicts be resolved to some level?
Okay.
And even if that resolution is, and just think about all our differences now, if that resolution is, I don't agree with you, but I know that your choice is you, and this is important to you, and I let you have that instead of trying to convince you to do it my way. We haven't resolved what we disagree on, but we have certainly resolved the tension between us in that disagreement. So something shifts. Now, always know, I tell you, it's different when you're dealing with personality disorders, because a lot of people, not everybody is willing to show up and be as honest as it takes, but it never ceases to amaze me how people are willing to talk about their very deep pain and hurt if the space is safe.
Yeah.
So most cases, yes, there can be some transformation. Sometimes there's a huge amount of transformation. But if someone is so locked into, for whatever reason, not wanting to change what things look like, then it's difficult. But then, Aubrey, I can work with one person. We can work with one person to help them deal with the fact that that's not going to change.
Yeah.
And we're systems, right? Most of the time when there's a conflict, whether it's a family system or a social system, if one piece of that changes, the whole thing changes. So you're not powerless in conflict.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Neither party is powerless in conflict.
Neither party is powerless.
And you,
there
as
can
a mediator,
be power differentials, but it is my job to help level the playing field on that, because it isn't good if one person has power over for whatever reason. And yeah, we can do that in most cases.
Gotcha. And so I would imagine, as a mediator, in the very, very initial stages of a conversation or mediation, there are some ground rules and some expectations that you would need to set. Is that right?
Well, a lot of mediators will say yes, and some mediators will say no, and I will say it depends. I don't want to take your power away to tell you how this is going to go, but if y'all start screaming, I will tell you how it's easier for people to hear you. But if you start screaming at each other, I'm likely to say, is this working? And are you willing to try another way if it's not?
Yes.
So a lot of people do set ground rules. I normally don't, because I really have found that I don't need to. And one reason is I meet with both parties separately and let them get out whatever feelings they're holding. And I spend a good deal of time with them, helping them get in a space where they can communicate without all that other stuff. Aubrey, I do. I work for the Los Angeles City Attorney's Office as a volunteer side gig, and I do the Community Police Unification Program, mediations between Los Angeles community members and Los Angeles police. And it is incredible when you make the space to hear and help people frame what it is that they really need or want to tell in their story without getting in those spirals that you talked about.
Yeah.
It is transformational in settings that we don't even think that there's room to build bridges. So it's pretty incredible.
Man, that's great. Oh, that is great. So I'm not sure how involved or if you even are in touch with any of the parties that you mediate beyond the conversation, beyond the mediation. But I was wondering if you have had any of your clients maybe come back and maybe communicate to you a lesson that they've learned from this mediation that they can maybe take with them and, you know, in improving their communication skills or their interaction and relationships with, you know, with people in their world.
Yeah, that's one of the really rewarding things on that. I do have people come back. I also want feedback, what worked, what didn't for you. So I do send a feedback form, but I have people come back and I have groups come back. Things work until they don't.
Yes.
And we want to say, okay, this is the agreement. It should work forever. And I tell people it works until it doesn't. And when it doesn't, you need to renegotiate. So yes. Say you and your wife have agreed that dinner is at 5 o'clock, but you can't seem to get home till 5:30.
Right.
And she thinks you don't love her because you're not showing up on time.
Yep.
And so 5 o'clock worked for a while, but now we need to sit down and renegotiate because it's not working anymore. Because we'll lock people into something they said 6 years ago when in fact that's not even relevant anymore. So people do come back. I believe they come back because it is safe. I believe they come back because we expand. We only know what we know, right? And so putting our heads together, we can come up with more possibilities than this or this. Aubrey, almost always in conflict, people think they have two choices, yours and yours.
Yeah.
And my job as a mediator is to draw a line between those. And we can look at everything in between those two places to find more choices besides two.
That's a very visual and intuitive interpretation of your job. And anyone, no matter if I was one of the parties, no matter which side I was on, I can clearly see and understand that, right? And I hope the clients try to keep that in mind as far as what your job is when having these discussions. So thank you for clarifying that, and thank you for your mediation insights, Kim. I really, really appreciate it, and I'm glad to hear that you do solicit feedback, right? And and they are comfortable and safe enough to come back to you and give you feedback and tell you how this has changed their lives, outside of the actual conversation itself. So that is huge, and it's something that just it just kind of proves, whatever your secret sauce is, it's working, and it continues to work.
Yeah. So the one thing I like about us in mediation is we're not over the parties. We are with them.
Yes.
It's in us. It's not me and them. It's in us. And even the two people who have drawn the separation, the line between me or you, it becomes us. And there's power in that.
Oh, totally power, because instead of like adversarial, us and them, which implies adversarial, even though you're not saying it's us, that's a larger number, and there's strength in numbers. And not only do you express that, but you demonstrate that in how you talk with them, and it's everything is equitable. You're not favoring one side over the other, and there's even small implications that some people who are hypersensitive can claim that you're taking favor over the other party versus themselves. And I guess you have to be mindful of that too.
Yeah. So I, in the process, I say, my job is to be impartial, but I describe myself as omnipartial. That means I'm for both of you, and really doing the empathy thing and standing in each other's, each person's shoes. But I also say, if you experience me as not being for you or for someone else, please let me know, because it's something we're checking for all the time.
Sure.
And a little secret I've never said in a podcast, but for me, it really is kind of a sacred process when people are sharing with you things they don't share with anyone because of shame and not being able to make that space. So I go into it with a prayer for grace and wisdom.
Good.
And during the process, it's I pray for grace and wisdom. And I think that space opens up. It's not my problem to solve. It's my problem to help them make space to solve. And it seems to work.
No, yeah, it does seem to work. Yeah, yeah. And and I was just about to get off of the mediation topic, but I was driven to ask that last question. So I'm sorry about that.
No problem. No problem. Ask anything.
Oh, thank you. So now I want to pivot over to the difficult topic of life-ending decisions, dealing with loss, and those sorts of things. And to tee us off, if you can just give us a glimpse into your book, How to Live Forever. And I sense there's a subliminal or metaphorical representation or meaning behind the first part of that title, but if you can just give us a glimpse into what your book is about.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to. So it's funny, sometimes people ask me what I do for a living, and I say I talk about the two things that people most don't want to talk about, conflict mm-hmm. and end of life. But I am still a registered nurse. I don't practice in nursing, but for a very long time. And I've worked in every intensive care there is. I worked in trauma and ultimately the emergency department. And mm-hmm. from the first person I saw die, I'm a 19-year-old nurse, and I'm sitting at a bedside, and I pictured this person who was dying as a book, mm-hmm. and their ends coming together as the book was closing. Mm. And I wondered about their life, you know, their story.
Yeah.
And that never changed in all the many years I saw many people die. It's still mm-hmm. knowing that somebody's story ended and wondering what they passed on. So then I go into mediation. The one thing that was always hard in nursing is people don't have this conversation. And right. in the absence of knowing what you want done and naming that, in the absence of that, medicine will err on the side of doing, and probably your family will too, which isn't necessarily in your own best interest.
Right.
So me, the topics are still about empowerment. So the book talks out of first about the legal decisions that you need to make, you know, mm-hmm. Wills, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Then the second part is on healthcare decisions. And it is to help people realize that it is their lives and not the medical system's lives. And you do have say, and you need to ask questions. And for me, I use quality of life is a way to decide how far are you willing to go treatment-wise, because people sometimes die of the treatments, right?
Yeah.
So what do you want your ending to look like? And Aubrey, you mentioned, you know, terminal illness and stuff. I know from working in the emergency department, we don't know if we're going to die from terminal illness or we're going to die when we walk out the door. So I think we need to go ahead and have these conversations. Mm-hmm. My next chapter after the healthcare is on leaving your story as your legacy, and there's a lot of forms to do that. Mm-hmm. But it is true that when people are asked what they want left behind from their loved ones, like 90% want stories and wisdom, and only 10% want grandma's gnomes or something. You know, the stories are valuable. And then I talk about bridging the conflicts in families, because I want us to be able to have the opportunity to walk out of life with no regrets. So
yes.
What loose ends do you have that you might want to tie up so you can say, I did this well at the end?
Right.
And then for all of these decisions, mediation is a tool to have these hard conversations with your loved one, or even to figure it out yourself, you know, to have mm-hmm. space. Because a mm-hmm. lot of times people aren't willing to talk about it, and we are all going to die.
Yeah.
So let's do it the way we want our story to read.
For someone who has made that transition from the emotional side to being a little more prepared and everything, and once their loved one has passed, what has their response or their feeling or emotional state have been?
Yeah. So you were talking about different sides of, you know, making this decision. I think we go into a denial side. We're not supposed to die. We are supposed to die. And I think normalizing death so that we can talk about it, which mm-hmm. is like normalizing conflict so we can talk about it. When we shine a light on things that are in the dark, they're less scary.
Yes.
So the answer to your question is, I think it's been beautiful to watch people plan ahead. That you revisit the conversation as the process goes, but there isn't regret then. There's greater peace for everybody, including the family you left behind. Mm-hmm. A quick story, one of my favorite people I started working with, they did a football player who received a diagnosis of something that was going to leave him more and more paralyzed until eventually he died. Mm-hmm. And he came to my office and he said, you know, I'm going to have this illness. I'm good with God. My life is good. I'm just going to wait to die. Mm. And I said, well, that's an option. But you also could use this time. You don't know how long it's going to be. And my dad got a bad diagnosis and decided he would wait to die. And it took him 10 more years. So what are you willing to do in the time that you do have? Mm-hmm. And what do you want your kids to learn from watching you, because yes. you're teaching them how to die.
Yes.
So we went through, he wrote his story out. He got a book, answered questions, and we did all the planning. And then came the day where he was close to dying. Mm-hmm. And we called in hospice nurses, and he interviewed a couple. And the family had a great sense of humor. So the hospice nurse stepped out, and he made a joke that I won't say on the air. His family started laughing. I left the house almost in tears, because here they were moving into hospice, mm-hmm. and they were so prepared they were able to laugh.
Wow.
And they could only do that because they were prepared.
Yes.
These people had been married like 40 years, the couple had. And at the end, she said, I think I'm supposed to feel more devastated than I do, but mm-hmm. I'm okay. And I believe she's okay because they walked a process. Beautiful. They didn't say things should be another way, or yeah. they didn't spend that time to go through the denial that's part of it originally, but they were so purposeful.
Yes.
We're purposeful in how we live our lives.
Yes.
I believe we need to be purposeful on how we live our lives all the way to the end.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Kim. And such a beautiful story, by the way, you know, for them to be in a state to where they can actually laugh, you know, and enjoy those last few moments with their loved one before he passed. And you're right. I don't think they'd be anywhere near the ability to laugh if they weren't prepared. So
right.
yeah, no, that's a beautiful story.
I surveyed people before I wrote my book. It's like, we all lost people, and some of us have mm-hmm. lost people that we know what they wanted when they got sick. Yeah. And mm-hmm. some of us have lost people where they're getting sick and we don't have a clue. And what a yeah. burden that decision is, because we don't even know what they would want. So probably right. we err on the side of doing, which honestly can be torture. It just
yes.
can. The thing about medicine now, and the fact that it helps us on so many levels where it couldn't before, also means that it's taking longer and it's harder to die. And
yes.
that's painful, not only to the person dying, but to the
right.
family. So we
yes.
have to pay attention to this. It is still your choice. It's not medicine's choice.
Right.
But we have to talk about it so that we know, just like conflict, what our options are on that
yeah.
spectrum.
Yeah, cause and effect, right? I mean, sure, the medicine may keep you going for a while, but then it makes it harder to die, and it may, I don't know, quote, buy time or something, but, you know, you still have to deal with the inevitable.
Yeah, know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what is yeah. that while like that you just bought yourself? You know,
yes.
is it a quality while?
Right.
And only you get to decide that, and nobody else can do that for you.
100%.
But let's talk about it, because I did a survey on that. You know, what is the level that you want treatment? Your yeah. life is worth fighting for you. Where yeah. is that for you, that you, when you don't have that, you're like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I need to just let it go and let, you know, nature take its course, and it's time to let go. And people ranged from everything from, you know, being able to pray, to knowing their awareness, to being able to walk, to being able to eat ice cream, being able to watch football. So those are the things that's the bottom line of where I'm living well, because there's a difference between living and living well. It's the existing.
Sure is.
Existing or living well.
Yes.
And I don't think we should settle for existing, because nothing is accomplished in that
no.
space.
No.
Except sometimes it gives the family time to make the adjustment. It is
right.
true. But that adjustment would be easier to make if the conversation were had ahead of time.
100%. Well said. And I totally, totally agree. In the experience I had in losing my father back in 2006, you know, and getting the arrangements and having that time to do so. And during that time and that while, he made the choice to not just exist, right? And so, it's an ideal type of closure, I guess mm-hmm. I can say, for
well
lack of a better term. So
that's so well said. So how was that for you, Aubrey, with your dad?
It was good. It was really good. I had I had some things I wanted to get off my chest with him regarding how he made me feel in certain parts of my childhood. And I thought I would just repress that and focus on just caring for him in the here and now and not bringing that up from 30, 40 years ago. And my wife said, no, you need to do it, you know. And so I went and had that conversation with him. And I felt so much better. And as the oldest of four children, he relied upon me to help get all papers in order, things that he had prepared with his estate for my mother in continuing as the benefactor. But certain things had to be done once, you know, he passed on, and having a full instructive list of things to do when that happens, who to call, what are the numbers, where to go, what papers to get, where the papers are located, just all those details, right? And so he was very, very cerebral, very factual about his passing. He called it check out of here. When I check out of here, you want to make sure you have all this in order. And so it wasn't ideal closure. I miss him dearly. I wish he was still here. I've even had dreams about him, but you know, it was inevitable, and it had to be a type of closure. And to me, that was the ideal for it.
You have peace.
I have peace.
Yeah. And he did too. He did too. And I think that's it. We can't control very much around our ending.
No.
To a large degree. So let's do what we're able to do so that we can, you know, have that peace and know our loved ones have that peace.
Yes.
And yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Kim, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Is there a way that the listeners can learn more about the great insights you have on conflict resolution and maybe even pick up a copy of your book?
Right. So the book is easily found on Amazon. Major booksellers can get it for you, but Amazon's good. For finding me, my company is Best Conflict Solutions. So if you Google that, there are some things on conflict there, including, you know, some of the recent conflict that's happened in Nashville. So, together we can all make this better. We just have to start having conversations.
Again, strength in numbers and empathy,
right.
Compassion.
Right.
All of that together makes us a formidable force for good. So, and you're leading that charge in the great work you're doing, Kim. So thank you once again for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate you coming. And let's please stay in touch. If you write another book, love to have you back on.
I am actually starting another book. I never thought I would write another one because it was painful to write the first, but on conflict, just kind of the things I talk on. I just, put it on a book, and it's very interesting how people are, I didn't know that. You know?
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah. Fantastic. Then I'm going to keep that in mind then. All right. Well, thank you, Kim. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, if you have a loved one, a colleague, a coworker, a friend, neighbor who just seems not to be themselves, maybe going through some dark days of despair, not quite sure where to turn or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them. Because on the road to rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. One, you're not alone. And two, there is always hope. The Road to Rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.